few weeks ago, as I sat watching the movie The Passion of Christ, I saw a scene early in that movie that really made me stop and wonder. Those events are recorded in John 18, beginning in verse 3. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Matthew says that it was a large multitude that came with lanterns and clubs and swords. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Jesus, who betrayed him, also stood there. Then, when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none." Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" Then a detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. The character that drew my attention wasn't Jesus, and it wasn't Peter. It was Malchus. Malchus came to the garden as a member of a mob. Shortly, he's on the ground, his ears cut off, he's bleeding, in pain. Can you imagine what that did to him? Luke records then in Luke 22 and 51 that Jesus stopped that and healed him. What a range of emotion. What's going on in his heart? He came as a part of an angry mob to pain. And all of a sudden, he's got to be bewildered, amazed. Does he show gratitude? But he's got to have sheer joy in his heart because he's healed. We don't know what happens to Malchus because we never see him again in the Bible. As he goes back to the high priest, could he help but believe in Jesus? When Jesus healed Malchus' ear, I wonder if he also healed his heart. Another example of one who had a life-changing event in his life is Paul. Paul says in Acts 23:1 that he acted in all good conscience before God in his life. That's when he's making his defense before Agrippa and Festus, so he has got to include while he was persecuting the way. And that, of course, is before he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, when a light came down from heaven with a power that literally knocked him to his knees. You know that in an instant he knew that it was God because he says, "Who are you, Lord?" Paul was told to wait in Damascus until he could be told what he needed to do. Ananias came to him. He's baptized and became a Christian and a messenger to the Gentiles. Few of us will ever experience such a life-changing event or a heart-changing one as Malchus and Paul. Paul went from being a Jew who had followed the law in all good conscience, persecuting Christians, to being knocked down by God, if you will. His life changed to being one of servant and teacher and apostle for Jesus. What a change. Few of us will have that kind of experience that says it's time to follow Jesus. But every once in a while, there's a lesson or a sermon or a conversation or a Bible study that touches our heart. And if we're not a Christian, we know then we need to be. If we fail to act on those beliefs, we're procrastinating, and it may be too late if we don't act on them. How many of us do as we're told in 1 Corinthians 11:28, where we're told to examine ourselves? And I realize in that context, we're talking about partaking of the Lord's Supper. We need to get up every day and look in the mirror and see if we're acting the way that Jesus would have us act. If our heart is leading us in the way that it will take us to go to heaven. 2 Corinthians 13:5 gives us that same idea where it says, examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith. Prove yourself. Are we the example we need to be? What's really in our heart? Are we really committed to serving Jesus? Tonight I want to look at a few examples of other people in the Bible who had life-changing events happen to them and how they reacted to those. But these are more like you and I are going to be. In Mark 10, beginning in verse 17, we have the account of the rich young ruler. Now, as he was going out on the road, one came running, knelt before him, and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to have inherit that I may inherit eternal life?" Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and mother." And he answered and said to them, "Teacher, all these I've observed from my youth." And Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go your way, sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, take up the cross and follow me." How many of us are like the rich young ruler? Because he fell prey to a greedy heart. How many of us today put our job, power and prestige, the love of money before God? Certainly here was a young man, like so many people today. He was a good moral person, but he forgot what was really important. Being a Christian is not convenient. And as a result, when we're confronted with the decision to serve the Lord, many times we don't. Luke 9:57 and following talks about the cost of discipleship, but also the idea that when we put our hand to the plow, we can't turn back. Many of us were raised in an agrarian background, but when I was a kid, my dad put me on the tractor when I was about 8 years old to plow corn. And everything's great as long as you're looking where you're going. But being a kid, somewhere my mind wandered off, and pretty quick I had knocked down 3 or 4 stalks of corn. And to see what the damage is, you go, whoops. And pretty quick, you tore up a whole lot more than you'd already done. This whole idea of putting your hand to the plow, the only way you plow a straight furrow is to look ahead and have both hands on the plow. If you look back or take your hand off the plow, you lose it. And all of a sudden, you've got a crooked row. You're off the mark. How many of us, as Christians, have a complacent or a retired heart, if you will, like the man of Luke 12:16-20? He tore down his old barns and built bigger because he had made a great harvest. And he says, "Soul, take thine ease." His attitude was, "I've done enough. I've got a lot laid up for a while." We can't retire as Christians, because if we do, we fail to understand Paul's analogy in Hebrews 12:1 on competing in the race, where we're told to run with endurance the race that is before us. If we stop working and pushing on, we can't finish the race. Being a Christian requires effort on our part. We have to work to learn more ourselves and to teach others. An athlete works to train for a race, and we've got to train our heart to serve God and to finish the race. Paul says in Philippians 3:12-14, "I press on that I may lay hold of that which Jesus has also laid hold of for me. I press toward the goal." He had his eye on the mark that he was trying to complete. And that's finishing the race. Young people, How many of you have a youthful heart like the prodigal son? Your father has taught you how you ought to live. And yet, you turn off and waste your inheritance. In the story in Luke 15, we see a son who finally recognizes when he's fallen about as far as you can go. Here was a young man, a young Jewish man, who was feeding swine. And for a Jewish boy to be feeding an unclean animal, that's pretty far for him. But he also knew that he had a forgiving father at home that he was better off with. He became humble of heart, repented of his wickedness, and came home to his father and asked for his forgiveness. If we reject God at first, we do know we have a forgiving father who will accept us back as well. The only problem with that, if you go off to sow your wild oats, so to speak, is we never know how long our life is going to last and when it will end. By indulging our youthful heart, we may miss our opportunity to be repentant like the prodigal son. In Acts 26, beginning in verse 22, we see King Agrippa. Beginning in verse 22, it says, "Therefore, having obtained help from God, to this day I stand, witnessing both to small and great, saying no other things than those which the prophets and Moses said would come, that the Christ would suffer, that he would be the first to rise from the dead, and would proclaim light to the Jewish people and to the Gentiles." Skipping to verse 26. "For the king, before whom I also speak freely, knows these things. For I am convinced that none of these things have escaped his attention, since this thing was not done in a corner." King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "You almost persuade me to be a Christian." Here Agrippa had a chance, an opportunity, to do something with his heart because he knew it was the right thing to do. But as far as recorded, we don't know that he ever did. Is our heart one of seeking, like Cornelius and the eunuch? Cornelius in Acts 10:2 is described as a devout man, one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people, and prayed to God always. But he knew he needed more, and he sent for Peter. The eunuch had come to Jerusalem to worship, and on the way home, as reading from Isaiah, we all know the story. Philip attached himself to him and taught him. And both of these folks, good, moral people, but they were seeking. They knew they needed more. And when they heard the word, they responded to it. Are we seeking the truth? Can it be said of us that we're like the Bereans of Acts 17, that they were not only when they received the word, that they also search the scriptures daily to see if the things that they were taught were true? Or are we just listening for what's taught from the pulpit and not paying any attention other than trying to find out for ourselves? If you're not a child of God tonight, I doubt you will be healed of having your ear cut off or blinded by a light like Paul. But we must, all of us, seek the Lord like Cornelius and the eunuch. We can't be entangled by the things of this world like the rich young ruler or become complacent. God's word is described in Jeremiah 23 and 29 as a fire and like a hammer that breaks stones. Have we let that fire stir our heart to action or let this hammer break a cold heart? We must examine our lives every day. Look in the mirror and see if our heart is the one that God would have us have. That decision belongs to each of us.